Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 49. I'm Janice Cunning.
And I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon.
And I'm David Langiuli. And Janice and Michelle, we have a special guest today, Dr. Eddie O'Connor. I know Dr. Eddie because he was actually my performance coach for, I don't know, maybe about 8-9 months. A couple years ago when I was training for the World Masters Championship in Jiu-Jitsu. And, you know, Dr. Eddie is a professional speaker, and he is both a clinical and sports psychologist, and he specializes in helping folks break down barriers to peak performance. And I found Dr. Eddie because he has this amazing course on the great courses called The Psychology of Performance. And I went through his course, and I'm a big fan of the great courses, as I know your husband is, Janice.
Yeah.
And so after I listened to his course, I was like, I'm going to reach out to this guy and see if he'll coach me. Like, cause I was bumping up against a bunch of stuff. And as coaches, we know that, you know, we could use coaching also. So anyway, that's the history. And Dr. Eddie wrote an amazing blog post for the fundraising leadership community about sleep. And he and I talked about that when in the coaching about getting enough sleep. And so he wrote a catchy title, like Sleeping Your Way to the Top, I think. And so welcome, Dr. Eddie. We appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much. It's really a pleasure to be here. And what an important topic that you've chosen for us to talk about. So I'm excited to get started.
So yeah. I know you're out writing and speaking about this topic. So why don't you share, like, what got you started and what got you interested in this?
Yeah. Well, of course, we're always looking for different ways to improve. And, you know, I think for my entire life, as everybody has, you hear about the 8 hours sleep. And for some reason, I personally never really took it seriously. It was a nice recommendation, like eat your vegetables and get exercise. And it's those things that when you actually go into the literature, I know as a psychologist, you know, looking into the literature of exercise for depression or anxiety, for example, there are just volumes. And then when you look at the medical practice, that there's always a pill or something else to take, and that, you know, talking to other psychologists, how many of them actually incorporate exercise as part of their treatment for depression or anxiety. And it's really a lot less than what the science would indicate. So as I do my own physical training and things of that nature, you start to look into sleep. And I read this amazing book, Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. And it was both terrifying and exciting. Terrifying because we are not doing it well. We are killing ourselves. And honestly, a personal story of what it really clicked with me, one of the chapters on sleep deprivation, how dangerous it is for us. My father passed away at 69 from numerous health issues, but I've now concluded that the result is that he was an immigrant from Ireland, and he came over, and for my entire childhood until the day he died, he was working 80 hours a week. Mm. So I grew up and I saw my father sleep 5 hours a day, take in a bunch of caffeine, and actually still be a happy guy and function and say he didn't need it and say he was fine. And to a certain degree, that was true until, of course, he wasn't. You know, he had these health issues later on, and he would blame, you know, heart or this or that. But I'm convinced the sleep deprivations would kill my father. Mm. And then I have athletes coming in, and I wouldn't really ask too much about their sleep. Or, you know, just, are you getting good sleep, yes or no, and then move on. And once I started to really kind of look into other studies, like at the NCAA level, the average college athlete in season gets only 6 hours and 22 minutes of sleep. So you start to look at their performance and the studies there. So now it's at the point that if an athlete's getting less than 6 hours, I won't work with them on any mental skills. Even 7 hours, I won't really work with them on any mental skills until I get them up to 7 or 8 hours. And for some athletes, again, particularly teens, they need 9 hours. Tom Brady, LeBron James, they're getting 11. Mm, Brady, wow. I hear, is in bed at 9:30 every night.
Nice.
And you wonder, well, gosh, you know, he's the world's best. Like, he wouldn't do it if it wasn't a really good reason, if he wasn't really feeling the effect. Oh, well, those are the athletes. That's up. No, this is human beings.
Yeah.
Why would we be created to live 1/3 of our life knocked out? If it wasn't an important process, why would we be spending 30 of our hopefully 90 years asleep? And we find out that it's actually not knocked out. It's not a sedative, which is why alcohol doesn't work. So if people are thinking ahead, oh, that'll help. That doesn't. there's actually so much richness that goes on when we're asleep. There's not a body part, there's not a body process that's not affected by your quality of sleep. Mm. So finding all of this out for all of these reasons, it just made me become really in the last year or more, really, really passionate about this topic.
It's such an antithesis to what our usual thought is about hard work, right? Oh. We, as a society, we value that, you know, I work so late and I work overtime and I push myself and, you know, I can do more. Yeah. It's hard for me to even take in what you're saying today. Like LeBron James sleeps 12 hours a night. I'm like, what is he doing? even though I'm understanding and I'm hearing what you're saying, and it's such an antithesis to how we sort of ingrain in ourselves what hard work is and should be.
Yeah. Well, and again, what he's doing, and again, I read this in an article somewhere. So if James is listening, I don't know if exactly it's 11 or you know, whatever. I want to be sure that I don't speak out of that. But we do know that numerous elite athletes are sleeping way, way, way more. And the reason for that is because of how productive and how hard they're working during the day. The big thing in sports psychology, sports medicine recently, has been recovery. We've always known about burnout and overtraining. But the world's best, particularly in CrossFit, you know, is a huge sport where they really talk about your recovery is just as important as your training, your nutrition, and your sleep. Because they recognize that in one day, a bad night's sleep, the quality of the workout the next day. So it's this process that goes back and forth, and they're equally important. They are absolutely important.
And even for folks who are not training physically intensively, each and every day. You know, of course, we do have a society now with the Gen X and Gen millennials that are much more active. So they're working 8, 10, 12 hours and exercising, right? And what gets the short shrift is sleep. So even for leaders who may not be professional athletes, they are professional leaders and they have, you know, long hours, especially in the nonprofit world. They work long hours. And there is this kind of like badge of honor that seems to, you know, in some cultures, like I know in some of the cultures I worked in, you know, people responding to emails at, you know, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, right? I did not do that, but I saw when they came in. And there's an obsession with this, and then you look at them the next day, and you know the hair's all messed up. They're looking a little funny, like kind of wobbly. Like I think you mentioned in the article, it's like being drunk if you don't get enough sleep.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about the cognitive, right? So yes, you know, the athletes we're talking about, we're emphasizing their physical recovery and stuff, but they are mental beings as well too, making decisions, you know, preventing turnovers, things of that nature. But as leaders, you know, our brain is on and working hard. So while you may be sitting at a desk, I do not mean to suggest that you're not working as hard or burning as many calories. In fact, our brain burns more calories than we take in during the day than any other organ or body part. So it's incredibly, incredibly active. And it is that brain that gets fatigued. So yeah, it's, you know, I think the challenge is, I take this almost personally, because as a psychologist, a lot of what I do isn't tangible or immediately shown, right? I mean, if somebody's sick and you go to a doctor, you get a pill, you have a product, you know, people always want to buy stuff because, you know, then they bought something for their money. And the challenge with psychology has always been like, oh, I don't know, it was just words, or, oh, you know, it's just a feeling. And it's like, well, I don't know. I tend to be swimming in all my thoughts and feelings, and that's what messes up my life. So I tend to find them out to be a priority. But the fact that we work with it and it's some more internal, I think that's what happens with sleep, is that if you send out that email, you write another page of your book at 1 a.m, you finish up that project, you've got something tangible and you feel like you did something. So you get that immediate reward. And that doesn't work with sleep. I mean, you may feel good the next day, but are you always going to know like how much better you're feeling or what you got done when you didn't? If you go to the gym and you get 3 more reps instead of the 2, like, I don't think that we're as aware of it, because in the one day it does affect us, but it's much more of the cumulative effect. As I said with my father, he thought he was fine until he died. And yeah. I think that happens to all of us. It's like, so there will be times that you have to do that one all-nighter, because the fact is it's due tomorrow. And if you don't do it, you get a zero. So you have to skip your sleep. But if that's your pattern, you are so much undermining your ability to learn, to take in information, to be able to retain it, and to actually do quality work. So as you said, when you get in the next day, really, if you go in as a leader on 4 hours of sleep, how are you able to respond to your employees? How are you able to tune into what you're doing? How many times did you read that email to understand what that person was saying? And did you misunderstand it to begin with and then act in a way that was inappropriate simply because you weren't able to pay attention or see what was in front of you? A great study actually showed that the sleep-deprived brain will misinterpret facial expressions as more angry or adversarial. So when we're sleep-deprived, we will actually see enemies where there are friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the things that really struck me was, as you know, this idea for leaders that you can impact not only yourself. You know, we talk a lot about emotional contagion, right? And so it's like you show up in not a good mental space, but that maybe you can talk more about this, Dr. Eddie, but I was so fascinated that then even if your team has slept well, you're going to negatively impact their productivity. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, so on the first sense, we know that if you're sleep deprived, and again, David, you made those great faces and postures about what it would look like, that didn't look very inspiring. it didn't look very charismatic, right? And of course, when you think about people who impress you, right, they have a certain presentation to themselves, and it's one that's well-rested. They've done lots of studies that you just show flashcards of people with less sleep and more, and people will perceive them as more attractive when they have more sleep. Mm-hmm. And so all of those things end up mattering. So if you want to inspire and project confidence, you have to be well rested. The interesting thing was is that even if you are and your subordinates aren't well rested, they're not going to be able to perceive how wonderful you are because they're sleep deprived, right? And their mood isn't great and they're, you know, going to be more negative or angry or things of that nature. And so it really works in both directions. As leaders, you know, we want our personal responsibility to be our best selves, to bring our best to our companies and to our missions. And sleep is essential to do that. But we can't then be driving our subordinates and reinforcing them for working those extra hours. And, oh, great, I'm glad you skipped that weekend. We can't promise, I've seen this in some organizations, say, hey, you've got vacation time, you need to take that, and then have them make up the work. Or be texting them on that vacation day, or making them feel guilty when they're gone. Mm-hmm. That rest and recovery is needed in both directions. And I think as leaders, anything that we can do to set up our work environment so that it's conducive both to us, but also to our teams would be a great advantage. And the research shows that it helps in productivity and results, which is ultimately what we're all doing this for, in addition to health. Mm-hmm. It's not at the cost of one or the other.
I see you talking about sleep as really a key component to working smarter, not harder, right? Yeah. With enough sleep, we can be clearer thinking. We can read other people's emotions better. We can have a handle on our own emotions better. We can be more conscious of how we're leading a team and how we're being in life. And it gives us a more quality of life, too. Absolutely.
Well, and let me ask this. So for what you guys do, I mean, fundraising is difficult, right?
Can be.
Leadership is a lot of problem solving, right? So how important is creativity to the quality of your leadership, and how much creativity do you want in your teams?
Well, that's a great question. The fact that many nonprofit organizations are thinly resourced financially. And so that's where you have to be in that kind of an environment, which is a stressor to begin with, right? You don't have a lot of financial resource, even like in a startup organization like ours, fundraising leadership, right? We have to constantly be creative because we just don't have a lot of financial resource to sit back and just enjoy things, you know? So yeah. We're constantly creating stuff, killing stuff, creating, trying stuff. And I find when I have a cold or the flu or not enough sleep, that I'm speaking personally, you know, I am not as creative as when I've had, you know, good exercise and good sleep and feeling healthy.
Yeah. And I would add to that too. It's, for me, it's also resilience, you know, which we work a lot with our clients on resilience, because when, and I must say, my mother tells these stories. I don't believe her, but apparently I slept all night the day I got home from the hospital. I mean, I'm a bit of a championship sleeper, I must say. It's a superpower I have. And I continue to this day at 50 to be a very good sleeper. But, you know, those rare times where I haven't had enough sleep, I find like something small happens and it's just, I feel overwhelmed. But when I'm well rested and caring for myself, it's like, okay, I know what to do. I'm creative. I can figure this out. You know, I've got this. And so that's like a big piece of it for me, is like, it's a trigger for me when little things are going wrong and I'm overwhelmed. Then it's like, okay, something physiologically is off with my body. You know, something needs attention.
Yeah. So 2 points, my brain's exploding. I want to be sure to get both of them. So remind me about the emotions in a second, but I want to go back to that idea and finish off on the creativity, because what that starts to get to is our sleep architecture. So we're all talking about get your 8 hours, but all 8 hours aren't created equally. We've got our circadian rhythm, and that's our sort of our wakefulness. And it's at its lowest point at about 11 o'clock. So if we're actually pushing all of our sleep back, you know, we don't have that natural drive to fall asleep. It can be more difficult. And our sleep stages are different. The beginning of sleep earlier in the night is when we get our deeper non-REM sleep. And that is where we probably get most restored, you know, refreshed physically, mentally, emotionally. And then it's our REM sleep that has longer durations at the end of our night, in the last 2 hours in particular of our sleep, that we do most of our dreaming. And that's where we're actually storing more of that information. And that's where our creativity really gets the biggest boost. So if you start to think about that, yeah, you know, if you're getting up for those early morning meetings, which I think is probably the biggest thing in corporate America, those early mornings, you know, are you getting up at 4 or 5 o'clock to work out early, which is great to be healthy, but you're cutting out your biggest time opportunity for that creative REM sleep. So we want to be careful about, you know, how we divide up those eight or nine hours. Mm-hmm. And then the other part about, as you were saying, the emotions, the physiology behind that one is our amygdala is where our emotions are, back of our head. And our prefrontal cortex is where that emotional control comes from, our logical thinking. And it turns out when we're sleep deprived, that gets severed. The connection between the two is, you know, our frontal lobe goes offline. So that's dangerous, right? That's bad. We become much more primal, we become much more reactive, and there's nothing we can do about it. There's what I've found, again, as I talk about working with my performers, you know, I could teach them all the skills, but you will physically not be able to do them. It's the thing with sleep. It's like, if you don't have enough, you're coming in with a 50% charge battery, and I can get you to, you know, maximize that 50%, but you're still only at 50%. You know, there, nobody gets anything out of this, if you could just get that there is no substitute for sleep. There's no makeup. There's no, like, if you miss a day, you've missed a day. You can't catch up. That's another false belief. So your experience of, oh yeah. And it's also the extreme emotions. I had an athlete where I knew he was getting sleep deprived. I'm like, yeah, do you ever get the giggles? And he just looked at me like, how did you know? I go, sometimes I just can't stop laughing. And I'm like, well, that's your amygdala. It's not only the strong negative emotions, but when you're kind of losing it and just laughing, and can't take things seriously, that's the other extreme on the positive side. You may enjoy it, but it's not functionally helpful.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, so much. Yeah, there's a lot there. Yeah. But the bottom line is really, I mean, it's like so simple. No, there's a lot there. We love it, you know. And of course, the book you cited, it's in, there's a link from the blog post to the book. I have it in my queue for Audible. I intend to listen to it. But the bottom line is get at least 8. And then the timing of that is important too. So if you're getting up regularly, like I regularly get up between 5:30 and 6 a.m. And because, but I'm, you know, in bed by 9.
Yeah. And so you bring up a good point too. There are, it's not exactly those timings. There's about a, you know, roughly a third. There are some people that do hit that mark. There are people who are early risers. I am not one of them. I actually fall legitimately into the other category, which is late, you know, closer to the night owl. So really the best thing that you can do if you want to take action on something like this is if you can get yourself a couple of days and just go to bed when you're tired and get up when you normally wake up and test that out and find out, when do I naturally arise? Like, what is my natural cycle? And then you'll get to find out, like, are you an early person? And if you are, then that's great. You're built that way. In fact, that's been an evolutionary, it makes sense that some will be early and some will be late, because back in the day when things were dangerous, it made sense to have a part of the population be awake early and a part of the population be able to stay up late, so that maybe we only get that 4-hour window where everybody's asleep and we're at danger. Mm-hmm. So there's a biological drive to say that there is that difference. Mm-hmm. So you bring up a great point, David. We shouldn't tell everybody go to bed at 11, that's right for you. But test it out and see what is. Because if you are a late worker and you have an early morning job, it's going to affect you. You can't become the other.
Yeah. Well, I think you're pointing us here and the audience as to where we want to give them a bit of a challenge. You've already, I think, started to articulate the challenge, which is, you know, test, first of all, experiment with, you know, with sleeping and see what your natural or what feels natural to your, to when you want to go to sleep and when you want to get up. But we wanted to issue the audience a bigger challenge. We want, because there's a lot of folks who listen to this podcast who are not getting their eight. And so what do you want to give them to try?
Well, in no uncertain terms, let's go for eight. Like, go for a month, right? Because a day or two is not going to do it. You'll feel good, but you know, I promise you, you give yourself 8 hours of sleep for a day, you will feel like a different person. You will get compliments from other people, and you will see it in your performance. Your mood will improve. If you're trying to lose weight, I mean, there's other tangents we could go on about that, but you'll be more effective in losing weight. It affects everything, like we started off the podcast with. And I really want to emphasize, it's really make it a non-negotiable, because when I found these things out, for example, I was hit with all the same things that other people were too about, well, how do I start doing this? My schedule didn't accommodate that. And I thought, well, this is what people want. My boss do this and everybody gets up early, until I kind of realized, wait, I want to be my best self. So I have structured my client load so that I have my first clients at 9 a.m. because I'm that late sleeper. And I feel guilty about it. I've been doing this for, I still feel guilty about it. I walk in and everybody's at work for an hour and they're like, hi. I'm like, but you know what? I'm fine because I got well rested. I go, hi.
Exactly.
And then I go in and I do great work with clients. And I clock out or whatever, but I take naps in the afternoon. And I found when I started to do that, a quick 20-minute power nap, and I've extended my hours later into night, I'm doing a much better job with my clients in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And my workouts after work are of higher quality.
Yeah.
So I'm going against what everybody else is doing. But you know what? I'm doing better. My productivity is up. My mood is up. My health is better. Nobody's losing. So I challenge you to do that. Don't follow your feelings, podcast listeners. Like, you will get resistance. You've been trained for decades to not do this. But once you start and you let yourself feel it, I've never seen anybody who's needed more sleep, who got more sleep, say it was a bad thing.
Never. You know, I would love, and I love that. It's like, for a month, like, get your 8 hours. And as leaders, like, I would love it if leaders showed up at work and were like, oh, I had such a great sleep last night. I feel so energized. You know, I'm getting so much done. Like, instead of that old story of like, oh, I was, you know, up till midnight work, like, you know, let's rewrite the story. Like, let's start empowering ourselves and then also the other people on our team.
Yeah, I want to amp up the challenge just based on what you said, Janice. So if the leaders, if the folks in the audience who are leading teams take this on, and we're challenging you to take it on, and you start to feel better, then start encouraging people on your team to do it. Like, get their eight and see what happens.
Yeah, see how it changes the organization.
Really, actually track those outcomes. And you might need more than a month to however it might manifest in your company and your KPIs, but really look at it, because that's the idea. Some people be like, oh my gosh, I'm afraid. I'm afraid it's going to cost me productivity. I'm afraid this isn't going to work. For whatever reason, I found that people be like, yeah, that's research, but that's great in a lab. What's it really look like in my company? Mm-hmm. And so the only way to do that is to collect your own data. I promise you, you're not going to be disappointed. it may take a little bit of time. You'll have to be sure that people are actually doing it to the right degree and quality. You're going to maybe need to get a little bit of help on this. What are the behavioral changes that we have to make? It would mean things like cutting out the blue light late at night. I mean, the other problem of sending emails late at night is not only are you late at night, but you're getting all this blue light from your screen that's keeping you up anyway. Maybe you're having caffeine late, which is another thing that's going to kill your sleep. You might even fall asleep. And here's the interesting part. Even though you're asleep, the quality of your sleep is disrupted by these things. So there may be some work that's needed. I encourage you to seek out those resources to be sure that you're getting that good quality of sleep. But I promise you again, if you look for the results, you'll see them and it can change your culture.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, and just a reminder, we'll link to the blog post, and that also links you then to the book. So that's like another resource definitely that people can, you know, a lot of teams have book clubs and that kind of thing in their organization. So this would be a great read. So thank you, Dr. Eddie.
Yeah, my pleasure.
For joining us. I think, you know, the three of us really are passionate about sleep and health and eating well and exercise, you know, generally. And so we're definitely, that's something as coaches that we like to bring to our clients. And it's been delightful to have you bring this, you know, more illumination to it and also passion. Thank you for your passion around this topic.
Yes, thank you.
So we're going to just remind you that if you haven't subscribed already to the podcast, we'd love you to do that. We're on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And the challenge is for the month, get your 8 hours of sleep. And then as a leader, talk about the benefits and encourage your team to do that. And we invite you to go put it into practice.